So welcome. There it is. So welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my delight to serve this warm and active congregation. And I want to let everybody know that each and every one of you is welcome here today. If you're brokenhearted, full of despair, walking bravely into the world even though you are filled with pain, if you are fearful, you are welcome here. If you are filled with happiness and abundance, lightness and grace, hopeful and full of energy, you too are welcome here, no matter how they are or who they are or who they love. We are a place of love and inspiration, community, compassion, and service for all who come through our doors. So I want to welcome everybody who's new today. It's lovely to have you with us. And there are visitor forms in the front of your chair that you can fill out if you're interested in getting information on what's happening at WOOF. And this is for everybody. You get an e-blast every week and a monthly notice of things happening here, and that's really how you get to know each other and build community and action and service and all the things that we are happy to build here at WOOF. I have two announcements. One is that we have two people who are willing to host Thanksgiving for all of you who are looking for somewhere to spend Thanksgiving. So you could let Jen know after the service who you are. She's not here today. Do not let her know. There is a notice in your e-blast and in your order of service that came in your mail today, so you can reach out to the people who are doing that. All right, is anyone who's hosting that here right now? Okay, they're not here. All right. So, and the other one is that there's going to be a special meeting. I'm going to talk about it in my sermon, but there's going to be a special meeting next week after the service to do some reflecting and some organizing work around resistance in the coming months and years. So that is a good place for people to go. So we're going to do something a little different with greeting each other today. We're trying an experiment. So instead of just saying hi to people, we're going to actually try having just a little question that could help us connect. So today, I want you to ask people, what gives you hope or comfort right now? If you haven't moved to hope, comfort is fine to use. But if you do have something that's giving you hope, you know, that's great to share too. So you'll have a time to maybe talk to a couple of people and ask each other that question. You may rise and greet each other.
Children up, they are not heavy. I'm gonna lift my children up, they are not heavy. I'm gonna lift my children up, they are not heavy. If I don't lift them up, if I don't lift them up, if I don't lift them up, I will fall down.
Elders are next.
I'm gonna lift my elders up, they are not heavy. I'm gonna lift my elders up, they are not heavy. I'm gonna lift my elders up, they are not heavy.
If
I don't lift them up, if I don't lift them up, if I don't lift them up,
last verse is people.
I'm gonna lift my people up, they are not heavy. I'm gonna lift my people up, they are not heavy. I'm gonna lift my people up, they are not heavy.
If
I don't lift them up, if I don't lift them up, if I don't lift them up, I will fall down.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
I would like to invite
Nora. Nora up to light our chalice. So we're going to light this chalice this morning, which is the symbol of our faith, Unitarian Universalism, for the courage and comfort that it can offer to us at all times. We will now say our affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wonderful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Scott Winters, and my pronouns are he and him, and I'll be your lay leader this morning. Our opening reading is by Reverend Angela Herrera, who is senior minister at First Unitarian Church in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Don't leave your broken hearts at the door. Bring it to the altar of life. Don't leave your anger behind. It has high standards, and the world needs vision. Bring them with you, and your joy, and your passion. Bring your loving, and your courage, and your conviction. Bring your need for healing and your power to heal. There is work to do, and you have all that you need to do it right here in this room.
Now it's time for our time for all ages. Oh, there you are.
Is this on? Oh, hey, kids. Yeah, join us at the front for the story. Today's story is called Those Darn Squirrels by Adam Rubin. On the outskirts of town, at the edge of the forest, there was a little old house. The only thing older than the little old house was the man who lived in it, Old Man Fouquire. Old Man Fouquire was so old that when he sneezed, dust came out. He was also a grump. He hated pie. He hated puppies. The only thing he liked was birds. All summer long, the old man painted pictures of the birds that visited his backyard. There were whirly birds and bonga birds, baba birds and yaba birds. Even a rare fugle bird came by once or twice. Fouquire's paintings weren't very good, but the birds never said anything. When the air turned crisp and the leaves began to change color, the old man grew sad. He knew that soon the birds would fly south for the winter, as they did every year, and that he would be lonely. Then he had an idea. If he fed the birds, maybe they would stick around. So, Old Man Fouquire built beautiful bird feeders and put them up all around his backyard. He filled the feeders with delicious seeds and berries, and soon birds came from all over the forest just to eat in the old man's yard. But the birds weren't the only ones who liked the bird feeders. The squirrels did, too. Not many people know this, but squirrels are the cleverest of all the woodland creatures. In fact, they're fuzzy little geniuses. They can make a house out of a tree, a bed out of a bunch of leaves, and a box kite out of twigs, dirt, and squirrel spit. They're also excellent at math. Winter was fast approaching, and the squirrels needed to gather as much food as they could to get ready, so they decided to take some of the bird food. The birds were not happy. Neither was Old Man Fouquire. When he discovered what had happened, he shook his old man fist and he yelled, "Those darn squirrels!" He filled up the feeders again, but this time he hung them from a clothesline. And then he went back inside, confident that the squirrels would no longer be able to get the seeds and berries. But the squirrels were very determined. They devised a plan, and this time they took all the food from the bird feeders. The birds were furious. "Harumph, harumph, harumph," yelled the bonga bird. "Those darn squirrels," yelled Old Man Fouquire. "Yum," said the squirrels. Now it was Old Man Fouquire's turn for a plan. He went to the general store to get supplies. He bought lasers and clamps. He bought wires and springs. He bought all sorts of tools and built a veritable fortress around his bird feeders. And then he refilled them very carefully. "Na, na, 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 na," snorted the fugle bird. The squirrels stayed up all night working out their strategy. They drank cherry cola. They ate salt and vinegar chips to help them stay awake. And finally they had it. The perfect plan. They put on their tiny helmets and prepared to launch themselves into the air over the fence between the lasers and on to the bird feeders. The first squirrel misfired and hit a tree. The second squirrel went too high and landed in a bucket. The third squirrel sailed clear over the house. The birds laughed and laughed. They each had one last delicious mouthful of seeds and berries from the old man's feeders, and then they flew south for the winter, just as they did every year. Said the fugle bird. after the birds left, old man Fuquire was lonely, just as he was every year. He fixed himself some cottage cheese and pepper, his favorite snack, but he was still lonely. When he looked out the window, the squirrels could tell he wasn't happy. "Go away," shouted the old man. "I don't like you squirrels." The squirrels held a meeting deep inside a large tree. They decided to give the old man a present to make up for taking the seeds and berries. Now, not many people know this, but squirrels are not only fuzzy little geniuses, but they also collect just about anything they find on the ground. And these squirrels had a vast stockpile of spectacular junk to choose from. But what would Fuquire like? Bottle caps? Popsicle sticks? Postage stamps? Finally, they had it. The perfect gift. The squirrels stacked all their loose change on Old Man Fuquire's doorstep. There were dimes and pennies. There were nickels and quarters. There were even a few tokens from Coco's Arcade. It all added up to $47.36, plus a few rounds of skee ball. "Maybe you squirrels aren't so bad," Fuquire said when he found the coins. "But I still like birds better." This gave the squirrels another idea. They raided their junk collection again and got to work. When Old Man Fuquire woke up the next morning, he was amazed to see that the birds had returned. But wait, those weren't birds. They were squirrels in disguise. "A great googly moogly," said Old Man Fuquire. "This will make quite a painting." He ran outside and took down the lasers and the wires and the spring-loaded trapeze. He turned all the bird feeders into squirrel feeders, and then he painted till his brush ran out of bristles. The squirrels were so overjoyed that they had a party in Old Man Fuquire's house. "Those darn squirrels," said Fuquire, and he shook his old man fist and smiled. That's a great story. And one of the things that we can learn from that story is how working with nature is sometimes better than trying to work against it. And that's what the kids are going to be doing today in class. Winter is coming, but that doesn't mean that we stop taking care of the land or our gardens. So we're going to be winterizing our gardens today and making use of our thousands of classroom pets, the red wiggler worms that are in our classroom. So now if you could stand and form arches across the aisleways, we'll sing the kids to their classrooms.
As we go, as you go, may your hearts be at peace as you go.
As we enter into this time of gratitude and giving, I'd like to read a few words by Michael LeDuc. "May we look with gratitude upon this day for the beauty of the world, for the first radiance of dawn, and the last smoldering glow of sunset. Let us be thankful for physical joys, for hills to climb and hard work to do, for music that lifts our hearts in one breath, and for the hand clasp of a friend, and for the gracious loveliness of children who remind us all of the wonders of life. May we appreciate, above all, the concern and love of all of those around us, for the exceeding bliss of the touch of the holy, which suddenly awakens our drowsy souls to the blessed awareness of the divine within us and within others. For all of this and for the countless other blessings present in our lives, let us be grateful. Today is Donate the Basket Sunday, and Howard, would you like to come forward and share a little bit about this quarter's partnership?
happened right there. You have to move. Thanks, Scott. My name is Howard Baldwin. This quarter, I nominated a local group in Lake Oswego called Respond to Racism, which is focused on teaching high school students to be anti-racist. It supports scholarships. It gave four $2,000 scholarships this year to four students of color. And it does wonderful work supporting other organizations in terms of sponsorships and in terms of its monthly meetings. If you have any interest, I can certainly give you its website and tell you when their monthly meetings are. They have excellent speakers, and I enjoy working with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Howard. The host may now come forward to collect our offering. Thank you so very much for your generosity today. And will you join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving?
Let us be grateful we are able to give, for we do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs,
so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
This week was Trans Day of Remembrance. Each year, many trans people, particularly black trans women, are targeted with violence and sometimes death. Remembering them and the violence and threat to trans people, especially at this time, is important. So let us remember to offer them care and solidarity in the struggle they have to be seen and included fully in our society. This is our times when we hold the joy and wonder of life, as well as the pain and suffering of life. This is just the human reality, that sometimes there is so much joy and wonder, and other times there is pain and suffering. And sometimes they are right next to each other, in the same hour, in the same minute. And we hold in this community the things that we want to celebrate and hold up, as well as the times of suffering, so we can care for one another. And this, we invite people to come forward and place a stone in the water for your joys and sorrows that are in your heart. And the bowl represents the care and support of this community. If you would like, you can say a sentence or a short sentence or so to share what your joy and sorrow is. So we invite people to come up this side and come around this way as you drop stones.
From Long Island, New York, is in Portland, and I get to see her on Thursday. She lives in Jerusalem, actually, and she's a very highly requested spiritual warrior and lecturer and teacher, and she's also a trans woman.
My joy is that my daughter Jane, who grew up at WUF and is turning 20 in a few days, is back at WUF, and she's working in the nursery 2 Sundays a month.
I drop a stone for the trans people who are in our hearts and in our communities, and one last stone for all the joys and hearts that remain, all the joys and sorrows that remain in our hearts. It is now time for meditation, reflection, and prayer, as is your tradition. We start with the words of Rosemary Wotolla Tromer. So I can't save the world. I can't even save myself. Can't wrap my arms around every frightened child. Can't foster peace among nations, can't bring love to all who feel unlovable. So I practice opening my heart right here in this room and being gentle with my insufficiency. I practice walking down the street heart first. And if it is insufficient to share love, I practice loving anyway. I want to converse about truth, about trust. I want to invite compassion into every interaction. One willing heart can't stop a war. One willing heart can't feed all the hungry. And sometimes, daunted by a task too big, I ask myself, what's the use of trying? But today the invitation is clear. to be ridiculously courageous in love. To open the heart like a lilac in May, knowing freeze is possible, and opening anyway. To take love seriously, to love wildly, to race up in the world as if I was a puppy, adoring and unjaded, stumbling on my own exuberance, to feel the shock of indifference, of anger, of cruelty, of fear, and stay open. To love as if it matters, as if the world depends on it. Let us take a moment of silence in meditation, prayer, or reflection.
What ever has done.
a Jewish myth. At the beginning of time, God's presence filled the universe. To make room for creation, God contracted himself, forming a dark mass. God then said, "Let there be light," and 10 holy vessels came forth, each filled with primordial light. However, these vessels were too fragile to contain such powerful divine light and broke open, scattering holy sparks everywhere. Our second reading is by poet Stuart Kestenbaum, and you may recognize these words from the chorister's song. Gather up whatever is glittering in the gutter, whatever is tumbled in the waves or fallen in flames out of the sky. For it's not only our hearts that are broken, but the heart of the world as well. Stitch it back together. Make a place where the day speaks to the night and the earth speaks to the sky. Whether we created God or God created us, it all comes down to this. In our imperfect world, we are meant to repair and stitch together what beauty there is. Stitch it with compassion and wire. See how everything we have made gathers the light inside itself and overflows a blessing.
In the Jewish story of Tikkun Olam, we are asked to scoop up the light of the broken primordial light that fell everywhere, making sparks of the divine and holy. In the Jewish tradition, that spark resides in each of us and all over the world. And it is our responsibility to stitch it back together, to run exuberantly, filling the world with love, to bring together that light that is broken and bring it together so that it shines with compassion and hope and justice. This month, our theme is repair. And I imagine these days, many of us have been asking, how do we repair a broken world? How do we scoop up the light of all that is good and loving and just and bring it together so that it shines on all people and all of life? How do we repair a world where it is perfectly normal to think some people are less deserving by their very existence, sometimes of even deserving worse than less, sometimes deserving of violence, famine, heartbreak, and death, just because of where they were born, what they look like, or who they most truly are in their deepest beings? How do we repair a world where the non-human world is barely considered alive and certainly not considered worthy of protection? The world needed repair before the election, and it needs repair now. Now, though, a great power has been unleashed that has indicated it will inflict even more pain on those who have been considered lesser by many. It has intensified and brought more clearly to our attention the pain and suffering in the world. Conflict, writes UU minister Teresa Cooley in her widely acclaimed book, Transforming Conflict, The Blessings of Congregational Turmoil, is It's actually super helpful. We will talk more. So how she defines conflict is when we feel deeply at odds with one another or misunderstood in a significant way. To say we are in times of great conflict is somewhat of an understatement. The most intense conflict happens between people or factions when our values and the things that matter to us most, really matter, are threatened. And national power is threatening absolutely things that matter to us. Safety nets, environmental and worker regulations, the worth and dignity of every person, fairness and justice. At the same time, most of us hate conflict. Not all of us. We're not all the same. But most of us hate conflict. We live in a conflict-avoidant culture, after all, where expressing rage, pain, and distress publicly is considered to be in bad taste. At the same time, our bodies react to conflict the same way it reacts to physical threat. Suddenly, our amygdala or lizard brain is in charge of the situation. It shuts down the neocortex and tells us to flee, to fight, to freeze, and to fawn. These are the only things the amygdala knows how to do. However our particular bodies react when threatened, it's usually pretty unpleasant. Since these unpleasant emotions flood our bodies to get us to respond, that's what the amygdala does. When right now, when so much of the world's brokenness is flashing in neon light, and it's really hard to look away, we need to learn how to manage conflict in healthy ways, ways that don't lead to denial and suppression, which is freezing or fleeing, and doesn't blow up and hurt relationships when we fight in ways that don't help. So the very first task in any conflict is to get the neocortex working again. And this can sometimes, because that's the part of our brain that thinks and problem solves and figures stuff out. And this can sometimes be as simple as taking some deep breaths. Or taking a break from the conflict for a while and just letting our bodies settle. Sometimes it's more. It could be venting to a close friend or walking or other ways that we know to soothe ourselves. The point is to get ourselves out of reaction and into a state of curiosity and a desire to understand. The second task is to listen to the other and their different perspective and the backstory of how they came to believe what they do. Sometimes we think that giving the other side airtime means that we are agreeing. It does not. It means we care enough about the relationship to really understand why a difference exists. So we might ask in these conversations, tell me how you came to that point of view, or tell me your story, and let the other person know we are listening. So say what you're saying is, and tell them what you heard, and then ask, did I get that right? People need to be heard, and it is extremely rare in our culture to let people be heard. And interestingly, research shows that when we do this in conflict, when we listen, the other person is much more likely to listen to us. And often, both sides shift a bit in their perspectives, see things differently, so making a resolution is more likely. This happened in the story today. The squirrels paid attention to the old man, and they came up with some solutions to help him and to help them. Getting calm and listening are the most essential strategies for resolving conflict interpersonally. But we can also see it happening societally right now. When the politicians and pundits discovered voters voted on economic grounds and not against hate or for democracy or for abortion rights, suddenly the national conversation shifted to one about how so many seem to have dropped to the bottom of our economic system and why no one has done anything, even though this has been the reality for, you know, several decades. There is one more very important rule in healthy conflict, and that is not to humiliate the other person. Humiliation is the fastest way to escalate a conflict to the next level. Just think about it. If someone humiliates it, how likely are we to say, oh, wow, you are right, I'm stupid. I now see your point of view. Well, that is never going to happen. This was actually one of the president-elect's tools for rallying people. He repeated what felt like insults to him to his followers. After the Madison Square Garden rally, I saw a clip of him of another rally going on and on about how the other side was now calling all of them Nazis. And because who wants to be called a Nazi? It almost seemed like a trap because, of course, oh, yeah, the crowd loved it. I mean, the crowd went crazy when he was just dumping on that. And it almost seemed like a trap because, of course, after the Madison Square rally, people were going to call him a Nazi. So, and then there he was, using it to rally everybody. There are many strategies for healthy conflict. And my hope is that this congregation can learn more of those skills by establishing a healthy congregation's covenant conflict resolution team. I guess we'll figure out the name as we go. However, these three positive skills, to calm ourselves, listen with curiosity, and never humiliate, are basic and meaningful skills that can transform things, and we can begin practicing now. And the emphasis is going to be very hard on the word practice. Our automatic responses to conflict will rule the situation until we train it to do something else. And this means trying again when we fail, which we will. A conflict researcher that I listened to tells the story about going to a conference where she practiced for a week an enhanced form of listening that has really been shown by research to reduce conflict. And she returned home after the conference, and that evening her husband brought up an issue that led immediately to a reoccurring fight between them. The fight played out until both were brooding in their own corners, just like it always did. It was only then that she remembered the skills that she had just practiced for an entire week. Frustrated at herself, she asked her husband for a reset. He granted it, and they tried again and ended up with a very different and better outcome than usual. The moral of that story is that we will be very imperfect. But practicing will improve things in our interpersonal lives, among each other, in our communities, over time. And practicing actually really matters, particularly with people who voted differently and support strategies we find breathtakingly horrible. Only if we can maintain a respectful relationship with those people in our lives does it provide the space for the other person to make a different decision in the future. This is actually the main basis of nonviolent protest. It's to allow the other person a change of heart without humiliating them with violence and words. But we know that there are times that people just won't allow you to listen to them, that they won't tell you the backstory, that they don't want to or cannot work to resolve conflict. Their idea of resolution is power to make things go their way, whether other people want it or not. And they want to silence or destroy the other. This is highly escalated conflict, the kind we don't want to get into, and it often settles into abuse. And the response to this has to be setting clear boundaries. And that can happen interpersonally, and that can mean interpersonally, and that can mean saying, no, you cannot do that with me. And then making sure that we and others are safe. Right in this moment, our society has become very abusive for many people. And it is time to say no clearly and with power, but with as minimal damage to relationships as possible, so we can build a new society after the abuse. And I don't know about you, but right now I'm having inner conflict. And it's between that part of me that just wants my ordinary life. I do not want this to be happening. And the part of me that has said, I would never be like the German people who just led their ordinary lives during the Holocaust. I have much more empathy for them than I ever have in my whole life. Because the reality is that to commit to resistance and societal change means changing my life. Inner conflict can also lead to reactions of fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. Right now, some of us are planning resistance, fighting. Some are done paying attention to this and talking about it, flight. Others are unable to move or to think, freeze. And some are trying just to make themselves feel better, fawn. However, as I have struggled in this, I have found amazing and hopeful is how many people and organizations are prepared for this moment. Some have studied what brings down dictators. Others have organized to teach and bring people together immediately after the election so we can begin practicing those kinds of things that bring down dictators. Daniel Harper is one of these people. He says each person needs to choose a path of resistance that inspires them and that they can sustain. No one can do everything. The next years will be chaotic, and reacting to every bad or weird thing that happens will exhaust us and distract us. Just think about how that energy rushes through your body, the anger, the upset, and wipes you out, burns out. But choosing can be almost brutal. Choosing what you will do can be almost brutal because we care about so many things. But choosing is more effective and sustainable in the long run. For me, this approach helps resolve some of my inner conflict. I can choose something I can sustain, do it with other people so I do not feel alone and feel bonded in community. I can continue the parts of my life that bring me joy and sustain me because that is really important for all of us to do as well. It is because we want joy and a fulfilling life that we resist. Harper describes four pathways of resistance, and all require courage. The first is protecting people. This means working on projects that support and protect people who will be specifically targeted in this regime. Immigrants, trans people, LGBTQI people, people seeking abortions, and undoubtedly many others. If you enjoy direct service or planning, this may be for you. The second is defending institutions. This is particularly important for people who work inside institutions that the regime wants to destroy or use in new ways, such as the government, military, and universities. These people have power to resist and will need support from people outside the institutions, particularly their families and friends. And if this is one of you, maybe this is the right thing for you to pay attention to. The third is to disrupt and disobey. This means non-cooperation and actions that disrupt the workings of society and put pressure on the government to make changes. When the Trump administration shut down the government in 2019, airline attendants threatened a general strike. The potential economic impacts of the strike scared the administration and they opened the government. The final goal of this pathway is mass non-cooperation. This turns out to be one of the most effective ways to take down dictatorships. If you are an activist or drawn to learning about nonviolent resistance, this may be for you. The final path is building alternatives. This is creating an inspiring vision for the future and exploring other ways of organizing a society. It could be building power for changes at the local and state level that we can implement. Learning from those who have been through these kinds of governments or those who have studied it and following their lead can give us power and reduce our inner conflict once we make that commitment. Four members of WOOF went to the Election Response Center's event, Making Meaning in the Moment, right after the election. Over 140,000 people working with 250,000 organizations learned about the four paths I described, as well as other healthy, effective responses to this larger societal conflict. The organizers created a guide for community gatherings that build community, help people understand both the importance of self-care and the power that we need to take down authoritarianism. WOOF is having this community gathering next Sunday after service at 11:45. There will be soup. The gathering is for WOOF and others, so invite your friends who might be interested to join us. Now is the time that all of us are called, whether we want to be or not, to live our values and principles fully, to learn new skills and make new commitments. We will be challenged. It will sometimes be very, very hard. We will be uncomfortable. And there will also be beauty, love, and connection. Lights will shine. The choir sang this morning, echoing the story of Tikkun Olon. Gather up whatever is glittering in the gutter. Whatever has tumbled in the waves or fallen in flames out of the sky, for it is not only our hearts that are broken, but the heart of the world as well. Stitch it back together. Make a place where the day speaks to the night and the earth speaks to the sky. Whether we created God or God created us, it all comes down to this. In our imperfect world, we are meant to repair and stitch together what beauty there is. Stitch it with compassion and wire. See how everything we have made gathers the light inside itself and overflows? A blessing. This is answering the call to love. Let us rise and sing.
Our hearts, it's our God. love tightly bound.
Corrupted by fear,
unwilling to hear,
denying the beauty we found. We are answering the call of love.
Hands joined together,
as hearts beat as one,
emboldened by faith.
Together and sing our final hymn, Carry the Flame, the front.